This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, January 10th, 2014. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, The Eternal Dead. Richard Eberhard was born in 1904 and died in 2005. In other words, he lived to be 101, long enough to see his mid-century fame slowly fade away. He's hardly obscure, but he's not mentioned a whole lot these days. David Yezzi says he's really been enjoying Richard Eberhard's poems lately. David Yezzi is a poet, and he teaches in the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. And he's here to read a few Richard Eberhard poems and tell us what he likes about them. David, you must have been familiar with Richard Eberhard's poems for a long time. He's anthologized frequently. So why the recent enthusiasm for him?
I think most people have read The Groundhog, which has always been a kind of anthology staple, and rightly so. I mean, it's quite an extraordinary poem. But as you say, no one's talking much about Richard Eberhard these days, but I was listening to a podcast of Jeffrey Hill giving one of his Oxford lectures in poetry. Mm. And he spent a whole section of one of his lectures talking about a Richard Eberhard poem and really got me interested. And he talked about finding a book by Eberhard in a bookstore when he was 19 and making a big impression on him. Mm. And then I felt that I had, by chance, listened to this podcast and heard about Richard Eberhard and gotten interested in it. And hopefully people who, by chance, are listening to this podcast may hear the name Richard Eberhard and go out and read a poem.
The power of podcasting.
Yeah, that's it.
So The Groundhog, I recently reread it. It's about a dead groundhog and its decomposition. And I was struck by its old-fashioned diction. For example, his form began its senseless change and made my senses waver dim, seeing nature ferocious in him. It's slightly old-fashioned diction. Is that, you think, what makes him a little dated for today's readers?
He's a visionary poet, but what I like about it is that he's a visionary poet that speaks very directly about vision and the supernatural in nature, this kind of mystical sense that he perceives in nature. And he can speak very directly about it. And occasionally his diction gets very rich and even can feel a little woolly. But he wrote for so long that I think his later poems sound quite modern, quite contemporary. Mm-hmm. But he loves those kind of chunky words, and he deploys them with real relish. And so they can be kind of a mouthful. And I like that about the poem.
Mm-hmm. So you chose a few poems to read for us. One of them is called The Project, and it was first published in Poetry Magazine in 1954. Can you briefly set this up for us a bit?
It's set in Connecticut along the Natchog River, and it refers at one point to Diana's Pool, which is a part of the river that's been made deep by a waterfall falling into it. They don't know why it's called Diana's Pool. Some locals say that there was a family named the Dianas who owned the property. Hmm. Some say that there was a forlorn lover, Diana, who threw herself from the rocks into
the pool.
So that one's really got some traction. But it's a swimming hole and people dive off the rocks. The University of Connecticut students, it's kind of a rite of passage to jump off the rocks into the pool, which looks a little dangerous. So here's the project. The mailbox, the roadway, and the dump truck. A day in June, blue and gold. The play rock, the high swing, the pine stand, a race of children readying time. A prospect of legendary Connecticut, angler flicking his fly in amber evening. Tumble of waters at Diana's pool, dive, shimmer and roil of bathers, devotees. It is the pageant of the American summer, blue, gold, and high, an elegance of time. When free-foot lads find a decaying animal in the woods, one yells, "Help! Don't breathe it!"
So just like in The Groundhog, there's that decaying animal again.
He comes back to it again and again, animals that have been narrowly missed on the roadway, and these decaying animals frequently become figures for our tenuous life on Earth and
mortality.
Yeah, and so he really, death, as we'll hear in the next couple of poems, really returns for him. And he actually did say at one point that it was his mother's death that drove him to poetry. And it's a subject that he returns to a lot, often in this through these very concrete figures of these small creatures.
Mm-hmm. The poem takes place in this swimming hole, basically, in a river in Connecticut. It says, tumble of waters at Diana's pool, dive, shimmer, and royal of bathers, devotees. It's that word devotees that leaps out of you. What is he talking about? The devotees of what?
I don't know, but I want to guess that, like Eberhard himself, they are devotees of nature, of Diana's, you know, being the nature goddess, that they're bathers. And nature also being one of Eberhard's recurring subjects, of course, undercut and haunted by mortality at the end.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear another poem. This one is called Only in a Dream, and it was published in Poetry Magazine in 1956. Anything you want to say about this one before we hear it?
The poem is a little mysterious, but it seems to me to touch on some of the same things that we've been talking about that appear in The Groundhog and some of these other poems. It's about mortality, but also possibly transcending mortality. You know, what is redeeming in life and what possibly transcends death. Again, quite mysterious, but extremely moving in terms of its music, which is, I think, for me, the way into the poem.
Let's listen to the music then. This is called Only in the Dream.
Only in the dream that is like sleep, when time has taken the measure of live things, by stark origination is mankind redeemed. Only in the melancholy of the music of the midnight within the blood comes the fulfillment after faring years. Only in the balance of dark tenderness, when everything is seen in its purity, do we penetrate the myth of mankind. Only in the mastery of love is anything known of the world, death put aside with pure intent. Only in the long wastes of loss comes the mystical touch on the brow, that triumph grow insatiable again.
You know, it occurs to me, this poem came out in the 1950s. That was kind of the era of Dylan Thomas. And there's something about the music of this poem and its density and its kind of mysterious quality that strikes me a little bit like Dylan Thomas. Do you think
I think that's right. Yeah, no, I wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, Thomas was such a significant musician that I'm sure Eberhard, you know, could easily tune his ear to that kind of music.
And like Dylan Thomas, Richard Eberhard seems to be making an argument in his poem, a musical rhetorical claim that's just beautifully stated. What do you think the argument he's making here in this poem is?
So it's driven by this kind of repetition, this anaphora, only in the dream, only in the melancholy of the music of the midnight within the blood, only in the balance of dark tenderness, only in the mastery of love, only in the long wastes of loss. And I think, again, with so many of his poems, he's talking about these great abstractions, visionary abstractions, but very directly comes the fulfillment after faring years. It's almost, as you say, it's rhetorical. It's almost oratorical.
Oh, that's, you know, a better word. Yeah,
yeah, he's making some rather grand, sweeping, charged statements about what it is to experience life and, as he says, loss and the quality and the of those things. Through music, which he says in the poem, the melancholy of the music of the midnight within the blood. I mean, that's almost a definition of poetry.
That's beautiful language. It's just the whole poem is beautiful throughout. Look at the end words at the end of each first line of each stanza: sleep, music, tenderness, love, loss. That's, to me, is the argument of the poem right there.
Right, and similarly, the last words of each stanza, redeemed years, mankind, intent, again. So it's about this kind of redemption through loss and difficulty, worked out in extremely musical terms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's hear one more poem. This one is also about loss, and it's an extremely musical poem. It's called At Night, and the speaker is at the ocean thinking about his parents who have died.
At night. In the dust are my father's beautiful hands. In the dust are my mother's eyes. Here by the shore of the ocean, standing, watching, still I do not understand. Love flows over me, around me. Here at night by the sea, by the sovereign sea. Gone is that bone hoard of strength, gone her gentle motion, laughing, walking. Is it not strange that disease and death should rest by the undulant sea? And I stare, rich with gifts, alone, feeling from the sea those terrene presences, my father's hands, my mother's eyes.
So at the very end of there, he throws in an archaic word, those terrene presences. And terrene, I looked it up, is the meaning of or like earth or earthy.
Earthly, right. Earthy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's paradoxical. Why do you think the sea reminds the poet of the earthly presence of his parents?
Well, I think what he's juxtaposing is, again, with the groundhog, it's almost the spirit of the being in question in the absence of its physical presence. And so he has come to the sea, which is, you know, terrestrial. It's not earth, but it is on the earth. Mm. And it's a very physical presence. It's a moving, constantly living, undulant presence. And juxtaposed with that is the absence. In the dust are my father's beautiful hands. In the dust are my mother's eyes. Mm. It's these memories, these ideas, these airy remnants of the memory and the emotional memory of his parents, which is so airy compared to the sea pounding. And it's the sovereign sea, right? It has this kind of ruling power. And so he's questioning it. How can it be that death has come to reside next to something that is so earthy and alive?
And yet, in spite of his loss, he feels enriched because he says, and I stare rich with gifts alone.
There's a kind of melancholy to that. It's in the richness of his senses that he feels the absence of this presence. He has life. He has language. He has a brain that's kind of teeming with all of these thoughts and sensations. So there he stands, rich with gifts, alone. They've left. They're no longer with him. That richness is kind of tinged with a sense of loss at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is a relatively straightforward poem to understand.
Right. I went to the ocean and I thought of my parents.
There is one phrase in there that I find a little baffling. Is it not strange that disease and death should rest by the undulant sea? Disease and death resting. Where does that come from? I don't even quite get that.
I think it goes to what you're talking about in terms of there's slightly this sense of redemption. On the one hand, disease and death has come to rest in that it's on the ground, right? He places his father's hands and his mother's eyes in the dust, right? So death has come to rest here on the ground. Mm. But also there's the sense of rest. I now think that maybe it's that death has ceased or paused here by the undulant sea. So why would death, who's kind of all-consuming, you know, incessant, pause here by the undulant sea? Maybe there is something about that life, that tumult that's in the ocean, that as he sees it, that gives death pause. And so that may be a quality that's layered in there, which is interesting.
Or it pauses for the poem to take place. There's a moment of meditation where, at least in this moment, he is bigger than death.
Right. He's feeling like it's not quite nipping at his heels in the same way, right?
Yeah, he can take it in a little bit. So if a listener's intrigued by these poems by Richard Eberhard, they're going to, of course, go to read a lot more poems on the Poetry Foundation's website. But what book would you recommend?
if I'm not mistaken, he's out of print.
And this was somebody who was a major poet.
Hugely laureled. Yeah. I mean, he won a slew of prizes, Pulitzer Prize, National Book Award, Bollingen Prize. In fact, one of his claims to fame was that he was sent by the New York Times out to California to write an article about the poetry scene. And he was the first to write a popular article about Allen Ginsberg and the Beat Generation.
I can see the relationship.
There was a kind of, Eberhard himself was always writing, creating kind of his own rhythms, and said that Howl was really the standout poem of that generation. And Ginsberg, if I'm not mistaken, credited, you know, retrospectively Eberhard with really kind of putting them on the map. So he was an interesting figure, though not widely read, and so out of print, it's horrible to think. But you can get, I think, without too much trouble, a slim volume of selected poems that Jay Perini edited in 1990, and that's a good place to start. The selection is very strong, and you'll see, you know, in addition to The Groundhog, a number of the poems that we've heard today.
David Yezzie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
David Yezzie's latest book of poems is Birds of the Air. You can also read some of his poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org. If you want to tell us what you think about this podcast, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.